and whenever you like, Gretchen.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Gretchen. I am an addict and a chaos creator, controller, fixer, obsessor. I am fortunate enough to have gone through the Big Book Awakening Method, 12 steps for drugs, alcohol, and for chaos creator, controller, fixer, obsessor. It has been a real process. My sobriety date is August 27th, 2019. So I actually got sober right before everyone went into lockdown for COVID. I'm here in Texas, South Texas, to be exact, on Corpus Christi, in Corpus Christi on the Gulf of Mexico. So I have never really done any other way of the 12 steps other than the Big Book Awakening way. I came into the rooms through Narcotics Anonymous and was there 6 months, had a sponsor working steps, fully immersed in the program, really wanting sobriety for myself. But I kept, as I was doing the steps, kept saying to myself, and it was almost prayerful, like, there has to be another way. There has to be another way. There has to be a different way, because I felt like I needed to go back. I needed to try again. I was missing something. So everything shut down for COVID and we all went online. And oddly enough, I go to a fitness trainer. This was before everything was shut completely down. And I was telling her my story. It's like, I just feel like there's something more. There's something more. And she said, well, you know what? Call my Aunt Sylvia. She has worked with people. She's an alcoholic in recovery, and she's been working with people for more than 30 years. You should call her. So I was like, yeah, I'll call her. I'm up to my armpits in all of this that I'm doing here through NA. And then she said it again, you know what? You should call my Aunt Sylvia. And then she said it again, you know what? You should. I was like, fine. If it happens in threes, I'm that person that I'll actually take action. It might take three times, but I will take action. So I called her. And she went straight to page 52 and read me the piece about the bedevilment and diagnosed my spiritual malady. And I was godsmacked, you know, instead of gobsmacked, I was godsmacked. And I was fortunate enough that she led me to a workshop who led me here. And it's just been this really beautiful synchronicity that Big Book Awakening has been for me. I think from the outside, people thought that I was not that bad of a drug addict or an alcoholic, you know, but fortunately for this, for me and for this program, we diagnose ourselves. We are the people that diagnose ourselves. And this has really worked for me. So I've been asked to read, it's better for me to just go straight to the book, which is the thing that I love. I've been asked to read about the first part of Bill's story. And the good thing about Big Book Awakening meetings is we have our big books handy, right? We have them handy or somewhere nearby. So what my Big Book Awakening sponsor does with me and for me is she reminds me, just as the transcription on the top of page number one says, we use the first half of Bill's story, pages 1 through 8, as a tool to try and relate your alcoholic or chaos creator, controller, fixer, or whatever your spiritual malady is, to relate your alcoholic life to Bill's. Putting aside the differences, look for similarities and underline what you can relate to and how he thought and how he felt. Well, I'm a modern woman in small town Texas, and Bill's story was one that was in the beginning hard for me to relate to. So she really encouraged me to change words, to make it work for me so that I understood it in a way that felt real and palpable for me. And so that's what I'll do with you. I'll read the words and then I might change some of the words that I've changed in the reading of this. So war fever ran high. It was part chapter one, Bill's story, part one. War fever ran high in the New England town to which we new young officers from Plattsburgh were assigned. And we were flattered when the first citizens took us into their homes, making us feel heroic. Well, for me, war fever didn't run high. It was basketball fever ran high in my small town. And I was assigned to a college basketball team. And I was very flattered when they accepted me into this college basketball team and was gifted a scholarship there. So they took me into their team, and I felt heroic because I was the first daughter and the first woman in my family, all generations, to actually go to college. Here was love, obviously, my teammates, applause. For sure, it's a basketball team, college basketball team. War, we were not necessarily warring in the way that Bill was warring, but we were competing against other teams. There were moments sublime and intervals hilarious. I was part of life at last, and that was how I felt. I felt like I was actually part of life. I'd been on my own since I was 16, fully on my own since I was 16, and I felt like I was part of life at last. I was part of something at last. And in the midst of excitement, I discovered not so much liquor then or drugs then, but I certainly discovered worry, fear, resentment, loneliness. I discovered controlling, how to manipulate situations and conversations so that it came out my way. Or if I felt uncomfortable, I would go to any length, any degree, so that I would feel comfortable and to avoid confrontation. So, you know, it's depends on what your liquor is, right? But I had not really discovered liquor then. But I forgot the strong warnings and prejudices of my people concerning drink. And I was raised in an alcoholic home. My stepfather was an alcoholic. My mother married five PTSD Vietnam vets that were all alcoholics. So the alcoholics didn't stay in our life for very long, but the untreated Al-Anonic was in my life, my whole life. And she really only got sobriety the last, maybe emotional sobriety, the last 10 years of her life. So they had strong prejudice around people drinking and using drugs because of who they were married to and all the struggles around that. And I definitely forgot those strong warnings, just blew them off. Yeah, not me, other people. In time, we sailed for over there, or I finished college and I came home and had to go to work. And I was a geologist on a rig off the coast of New Iberia, Louisiana. And I was one of the only women on that rig. And I was very lonely. At that time, offshore, way back when, in off the coast of Louisiana, people could drink and did drink. And I turned to alcohol because everybody else was doing it too. This part of Bill's story, I won't change. I'll just read it like it was. We landed in England and he visited Winchester Cathedral, much moved. I wandered outside. My attention was caught by a trivial verse or a doggerel on an old tombstone. Here lies a Hampshire grenadier who caught his death drinking cold small beer. A good soldier is ne'er forgot whether he die by musket or by pot, right? So it's such a great little thing. But there were many moments that I felt much moved in my life. I was raised by very religious people. My mother was an evangelical Christian. My grandmother was a Christian Scientist, and my aunt was a practicing Buddhist. It sounds like the start of a joke, doesn't it, right? The evangelical and a Christian Scientist and a Buddhist walk into a bar. But I really did, from those three women, receive very different things. From the evangelical side of my family, I received this ability to sit alongside ecstatic states. And from my grandmother, who was a true scholar of the Bible, I grew to love spiritual texts. And from my aunt, who was a practicing Buddhist, meditation started a seed in me. So those things happened naturally in my life. But how many ominous warnings did I fail to heed? So many. I mean, there's more than I can recount or name, but I, needless to say, I failed to heed many ominous warnings. And most of those ominous warnings that I failed to heed were a clear intuition. And how many times did I blow past this divine intuition? And how many times do I still blow past that divine intuition? Although I'm trying to connect to that more and more, and I'm grateful to this program and for so many men and women in this program of Big Book Awakening that have reminded me to pray and meditate. And that there has always, it's been a little bit hard for me, because in the beginning, when I came to Big Book Awakening and people would tell me you should pray and meditate about that, I felt like it was almost a cop out. I was like, oh, they're just blowing me off. They don't really want to help me. They just want to give me the pray and meditate. But now, as I'm growing in this program, I'm seeing that pray and meditate can mean very different things. And I've actually gone to different fellows in this program and asked, what does that mean? I need practical practices around what pray and meditates mean, what that means. And the most practical one that I've received recently was that when someone tells you to pray and meditate, like your sponsor will send you away and say, well, you should pray and meditate about that. What he had me do was set a timer for 2 minutes and pray for other people, pray for other people, pray for my sponsees, pray for people at the light, pray for people that I hadn't thought about. Or so it just offered me a 2 minutes of prayer for others that was really helpful. So when I had resentment in that week, I would pause and set a timer for 2 minutes and I would pray for others. And so I really went long with that practice so that prayer and meditation became something different. It wasn't just a cop out. It wasn't just people blowing me off as I projected, right? But it was actual practice that I could build on and continue to build on. So when I have that ominous warning now, when I have those feelings, those divine intuitions, I'm more inclined to listen to them now, when before I would blow right past them. So at 22, same age as Bill, I was out of college, working a job. I went home at last. So I quit that job on the coast, off the coast of New Iberia, Louisiana, on an oil rig. And I came home. I came home to my city, Corpus Christi. And I did. I fancied myself a leader. For had not I been given a geological job on the rig off the coast, had my battery given me a special token of appreciation, my token of appreciation was I received a degree. My talent for leadership, I imagine, would place me at the head of vast empires and enterprises, which I would manage with the most utmost assurance. This is a line that I really had to underline, especially as a chaos creator, controller, fixer, obsessor. Gretchen would manage with the utmost assurance. And we all know that self-reliance fails. And when I see that sentence, I remember I can't manage anything with any assurance. But I underline that because I'm trying to connect with Bill, this man from back in 1930, whatever. And this was probably earlier. This might have even been in the 20s. So I'm trying to connect with Bill in the way that I can, and changing the words that we have here to suit us is okay. And I think that's one of the things that Dan Sherman did for us, is he offered us, and so many others, not just Dan, he offered us the opportunity to make Bill's story my own. And it doesn't mean that Bill's story has less power or less ability to connect, but it's a way for me to personalize this story so that it has more depth and meaning, right? So as we turn the page to page 2, I did not take a night course and obtain special employment as an investigator for a security company, but I did take a job as a lifeguard on a beach that was quiet and completely abandoned of people. It's a small town, and I was a lifeguard on a beach. But my drive for success was on. I would prove to the world that I was important. I didn't feel important in my own skin. I felt that I had to go out and prove to others that I was important, that I was special, that I was worthy, that I was good enough. So my work took me not about Wall Street, and little by little, I became interested in the market. But for me, my work took me to yoga, oddly, and little by little, I became more and more interested in yoga and its practices. Many people lost money, but some became rich, and that applies to me and to yoga. Many people lost everything, and some people were rich. Why not I? Why couldn't I practice this? Why couldn't I teach this? Why couldn't I be special this way? Not necessarily securities or Wall Street, but through love and admiration of my students and studentship. So I studied. I didn't study business and economics, but I studied yoga and its practices, as well as massage therapy, not law, but as well as massage therapy.
That's potential 5 minutes remaining.
Okay, great. I'll punch it. As a potential alcoholic, I was a potential alcoholic and obsessor and a drug abuser also. I nearly failed my massage license, and I was too drunk to take the final. I was too hungover to take the final. My drinking was not continuous, but it disturbed not my wife, but it disturbed my mother. We had long talks, and I would still her forebodings by lying to her. That's what I would do. I would just lie. I would lie to her to still her disturbed feelings. And I would tell her that artists were better when they were drunk. They were better when they were high. My art was better then. My best projects were conceived in this state. And though most majestic constructions of philosophic thought were so derived. So I assumed in my small mind, assumed that others did the same thing that I did. By the time I completed my course, I knew that, I was in an art school too. I went to art school, and I knew that being an artist wasn't for me. The inviting turmoil of just life had me in its grip. Business and financial leaders were my heroes. These were not my heroes. Yoga teachers and athletes were my heroes. But still, out of this mixture of drink, obsession, nicotine, ego, self-reliance, selfishness, I commenced to forge a weapon that would one day turn like a boomerang and cut me to ribbons. So it's like I'm always, when I come to this sentence, when I'm working with others, when I come to this sentence, when we're going over this again, if I'm in a workshop or I'm in the Wednesday noon meeting, it's like when I come to this again, I list out what is the weapon that I'm forging now? What is the double-edged sword? And a lot of times the double-edged sword that I have forged is pride and prejudice, or it is self-reliance, or it is a mixture of worry and obsessing. And so even though I've been relieved of the drink and the drug problem, I am still addicted to my thoughts and thinking, and I am in recovery for that. And so I am but when I come to this sentence, I feel like it's a God moment. It's like, what is the weapon that I'm forging? And a lot of time it's me thinking that I need to be special. I need for people to see me in a certain way, or I need you to love me. So what my BBA sponsor says all the time to me, and this is what I'll leave you with today, is that she says, Gretchen, you are special and not special, you know? And so this little aphorism has been so important to me. It's like, because I am a special child of God. I am special to the God of my understanding. And I'm not special because I am just like you. We are just like each other. And we serve each other through that sameness. So the thing that Big Book Awakening has taught me is it's taught me service through sameness, that I don't have to be above you or below you, that we are all just addicts that are trying to get better, that are trying to recover from this spiritual malady that was described to me on page 52 so long ago. I hope that was enough. I am so grateful that you allowed me to be here to speak to you today. And I encourage you to make Bill's story your own. It doesn't deny that Bill's story is what it was or that it's effective. It just helps us give it a new meaning to ourselves, and help others in this program give it a new meaning to them as we're helping them through the 12 steps. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for letting me share.